Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Great Indoors. This is episode 7 of season 8, coming to you from MWC 2024 in Barcelona. And yes, we're still here. So what do we have in store for you this week? Well, today's episode for me is particularly special. It's a particularly special one for the season as a whole and a personal highlight of our time here at MWC this year. Now, when we prepare for these shows, and trust me, there is a lot of preparation, certain guests and topics get us extremely excited in advance of meeting and recording with them, and for a number of reasons. And today's guest certainly did that for us before we even got on a plane to Barcelona. So why, I hear you ask excitedly? Well, when we look at carriers around the world, they don't get bigger than Verizon. And over the years, we have been fortunate enough to welcome several senior Verizon execs to the show, and we've always just had amazing conversations. But to have the newly appointed Chief Marketing Officer and Chief Product Officer for Verizon Business join us today is, well, quite frankly, enormous. And I will also be joined by, well, I will have to say, one of my favorite analysts in North America. And I can confidently say, and with much experience, his forward-looking perspective is rarely, if ever, incorrect. So welcome to The Great Indoors, a podcast where we look at the technological implications brought about by the next industrial revolution and how this can help potentially solve the biggest problems facing humanity. I'm your host, Matthew Roberts, and joining me as ever is my trusty co-pilot and producer, Larissa Yee. So we're still here. The Great Indoors is still here in Barcelona at MWC 2024, and it's bigger and better, well, than ever before. The Amdocs booth and TGI recording area are simply stunning, and our guests during this entire season are quite simply out of this world. So over the coming weeks, well, the remaining weeks of this season, we will be bringing you continual conversations recorded from the biggest telecom show on the planet, and every single one is an absolute cracker. So as I teased you there in my opening, we're thrilled to welcome Iris Meyer, the newly appointed Chief Product and Marketing Officer at Verizon Business. Now, Iris has crossed the Atlantic, and in her expanded role is setting the bar high, harnessing the power of generative AI and 5G to revolutionize customer engagement and product development. We're excited to explore her vision for Verizon Business and her strategic initiatives that promise to redefine the telecoms landscape. Amdocs' CMO, Mr. Gil Rosen, also joins me for this riveting conversation. And following Iris and Gil, we'll have a compelling discussion with Chris Antlis. Like I said there in my opening, one of my favorite and trusted analysts in North America from TBR, and he'll be sharing his insights on the seismic shifts within the industry, from the potential of satellite connectivity to the economics of fixed wireless access. Chris will unpack why these technologies are not just transformative, but also financially astute. So I'm really, really excited about this episode. So join us, stay with us for a deep dive into how cutting-edge technology is driving profound change in the United States. Let's get going. Okay, so next up here on The Great Indoors 2024 from Barcelona, it's a pleasure, it's an honor to welcome our next guest today. Her name is Iris Meyer. She's the Chief Product and Chief Marketing Officer at Verizon Business. So welcome, Iris, to the show.
Welcome.
Thank you, Matthew. Thank you, Gil.
And again, Gil will be joining me, and I think this is going to be a fantastic conversation.
Looking forward to.
Awesome. So first of all, I want to say congratulations on your new appointment. It sounds very interesting.
Thank you. It's been a couple of weeks, so it's been very busy couple of weeks.
Yeah. I bet it has. And for our listeners, Iris, maybe just give a quick breakdown of your role at Verizon and your history as well.
Yeah, sure. So my history or journey started actually from a little town in Finland, very remote start to my journey. I ended up working in tech and IT already early in my career. So throughout my career, I've been in this industry, very passionate about it. I lived nearly 20 years in London. And moved to Verizon from Vodafone just over 2 years ago.
Is that a coincidence? Both red companies?
Well, I need to keep the copy. Yeah. That was my wardrobe. Yeah. So
it fits the brand.
I know, so, right? It's much easier that way.
Yeah, it's good choice.
CMO knows these kind of things.
And Vodafone had a stake, a 49% stake in Verizon.
That is true. Yes, you're absolutely right. Wow. But yeah, it's been wonderful couple of years. And I joined Verizon as the CMO for Verizon Business. And now, as you mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I'm also leading our product.
And you relocated across to the United States after all that time in Europe.
I did. I left London. London will always have a piece of my heart. And now I live in New York. Yeah.
I grew up in London, so I can relate.
You can understand me. Yes.
Now, and you've inherited a very powerful brand, particularly in the business B2B domain. How do you maintain that lead? How do you take it forward now as the CMO?
Now, I love Verizon brand. It's such a strong brand. It's known as the most reliable network in the US. But it's very interesting when you look at it from B2B angle. Verizon, known as a consumer brand, very strong brand. But from the B2B angle, it's very important for us to showcase our customers that we mean business, that we serve them as well. Mm-hmm. So about 1.5 years ago, we launched Verizon Business Brand to ensure that our business
customers... It's pretty young then. I didn't know that.
Yes, that is very young. Okay. Yeah. That was one of the first things when I joined Verizon. Mm-hmm. And it just shows our business customers that we care for them. And we are not just serving them the consumer products. We serve them how they need to be served from the B2B angle. So it's really important for us. So last 1.5 years, we've been very focused on and ensuring that we have very customer-centric messaging. We serve customers from the local flower shop to global enterprises and as I mentioned, the public sector as well. So you need to ensure that your brand resonates with all of those different segments. And their needs are very different.
Yeah, I heard, by the way, one of your talks, you talked about the importance of small, medium businesses. Are they like 60 or 50% of the economy? How does that feel as a brand to know that you're actually a potential, very important platform for the actual economy as a whole? It's not like, oh, I'm a business, I'm serving someone. You're actually responsible for an important part of the economy. How does that come by in the marketing aspect of it?
I love how you pointed it out, because I think, especially nowadays and how the world is evolving, connectivity is such an important means for those small businesses to stay connected and serve their customers. Yep. And we take it very seriously. We're obviously very focused on our small business customers. And I would say, especially this year, we're launching Verizon Loves Small Businesses. So we're launching this platform that we ensure that we not only look at their digital needs, but we also provide training for these small business customers. Training, how to use those digital tools.
Is that the collaboration with MasterCard, or is that something different?
So we have different kind of collaborations, and we also have a platform called Digital Ready that provides free training and also funds for small businesses, minority owned businesses. So it's such an important thing for us. But on the other hand as well, like what we are looking into is that we serve them in the way they need to be served. What are their needs? We just launched for small home businesses like plumbing companies or cleaning services, an integrated solution with Chopper. Chopper provides them like application to manage their business. We integrated that to tablet and provide the connectivity. So wherever they are connected and they can serve their business in the right way. So it's really important for us to look at this holistically and show them that we care.
It's funny. So I used to be a CMO of a telecom, a small one. And I remember...
I stalked you on LinkedIn. I saw that.
So Bezeq is like the Israeli Verizon, not as big as Verizon. And it's interesting. As a consumer, I would walk into a business, even my hairdresser. I was like, okay, so what are you connected to?
Who's doing your security cameras? Do you find yourself doing the same thing?
Oh my God. All the time. Yes, yes, yes.
It's fun.
Now, it's really interesting in your new role with Chief Product Officer and Chief Marketing Officer. How do you use, I mean, and you're an esteemed, successful marketeer in your history, but how now is that taking on the product roadmap for the enterprise division? What challenges does that in itself present to you, Iris?
I'm really excited about it. And the teams are very excited about it as well. And I think there's been like, and Gil, I think you can relate to this one. Like over the years, I think the importance of CMO has certainly grown.
Has grown.
Absolutely. And I think CMOs have the seat at the table. It's not any more question whether we have it or not. Yeah. And I think one of the reasons is actually the wealth of customer data. Mm-hmm. We truly understand the customer. We have the data on the customer. Yeah. And that is key when you develop products.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I'm really excited to really accelerate our product innovation and ensure that we look at the customer lifecycle and ensure how we can make it easier for our customers to do business with us, but how we can also use that customer understanding of the customer needs to develop the right kind of products for them. Mm-hmm. So I think there's so many synergies and I think it's just yet another step showing that CMOs do have a seat at the table.
I think traditionally, the product was ready and then go market it. But now it's like the marketing will tell you what to develop.
Exactly.
That's the
difference. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's traditionally, especially in tech companies, Bill, you know this, it's inside out.
Yeah.
Like it's like product has this great gadget, great product, software product.
Find a way to make it happen.
Find a way to make it happen, exactly.
Gen AI, which is all over here. You know, I feel that from last year to this year in Barcelona, Gen AI was mentioned. This year it took over and I can see it implemented in our products. It made a very compelling difference. Now you're in charge of product and now Gen AI comes. It's like a big disruption. What mandate do you give to your team to like, okay, we need to relook everything. It's like, it's a new era. It's not just like a new development. It's like a new age. How do you see that?
It's interesting. I see the same, what you said as well. And already now this Monday morning, I've had so many discussions with our partners on how we can innovate together around Gen AI. I think for us, it all starts from responsible use of AI and AI.
Yeah.
As a company, that's really important for us. We have been using AI for a very long time already. And at the core of it, it's ensuring that we do it responsible, understand the risks and challenges involved and opportunities as well. But to your point, like, we've used AI, like my team, my marketing team, we have over 250 data models already. But now with Gen AI, I think we can truly accelerate in so many different areas. Product, absolutely. There are so many discussions of what we could do, how we could better serve our customers. But I think it goes beyond. It's also like, as I said, it's like in our customer operations. It's actually in our network operations as well. It's in a sales interface. So my team is also looking into sales technology. We are looking into Gen AI pilots there.
Yeah.
And marketing.
Marketing, amazing.
It's across everywhere. Yeah. And we are piloting, for example, in marketing, Gil, I think you will relate to this one, unless you have found a way that I haven't yet. But so I mentioned how much we have customer data and we even have behavioral, like real-time behavioral data, intent data. But to truly have marketing campaigns, personalized campaigns at scale and at speed, it's impossible.
Right.
Like looking at like US, all the states, market, different, like having like truly personalized, localized messaging for your customer and to do it at scale across US and at speed, I can't do it today.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really hoping, and I know Gen AI, we are piloting it now.
Yeah.
It will be such a game changer.
Yeah. For sure, that's something that for us, it's everything from the preparation of the materials and the everything all the way through. By the way, everything here is done by my team, not even like an external agency, maybe a little help and support, but it's given so much power to the marketing team too. And of course, the content creation and then the personalized content creation at scale is only something that can be achieved with AI.
Exactly.
Generative AI.
Absolutely. And then we, like, when we really look into our customers and their needs and find the right kind of applications to ensure that we help their day-to-day as well, I think that will be fantastic.
And my question relates to that. I think it's really interesting, and it combines marketing, generative AI, but it's the segmentation of your customer base. So I remember when I was at Vodafone Business, the segmentation.
Nokia as well.
Yeah, wow. And Europeans that have gone to North America.
I know, exactly. So many connections.
I know. But I remember that the segmentation model in the business domain was very rudimentary, pretty much based on the number of employees at that company. So what segmentation model are you thinking about now, Iris? And again, how's generative AI? It's going to get you down to a micro segmentation.
Segment of one.
Yeah.
It does. Oh, yeah. You said it. Segment of one. And that's the thing as well. Like, I think that's where marketing is evolving, has evolved. I think sales is still in terms of kind of like company
They're behind
sizes.
Us. They're behind us.
Always, right? I love my sales colleagues. Just saying.
That's our Instagram reel TikTok clip that we're going to put out there based on that.
But yeah, I think it's segment of one. It's a personalization. And as they mentioned, Gen AI will definitely help us there. But again, I think we need to be careful here. I always want to remind, like, it's customer privacy and security first. It's customer opt-in.
Yeah.
That's always our first thing that we...
Yeah, I was just reminded... There's the Minority Report. Tom Cruise walking through a street and... All the adverts are talking to him. That's the segment of one.
Yeah.
So we have the clip already for the commercial for Gen AI. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Now, going back to the product roadmap a little bit, and we've been really fortunate on this podcast to have several Verizon Business people. We had Debica last year. We had Sampath in Los Angeles.
He still loves Sampath, although now he's with consumer.
He's gone to the dark side. He's gone to the dark side.
I know, right?
And we... And we had Tammy Ehrman as well way back,
who
was fantastic. And I remember the consistent theme in all of those conversations was partnership, ecosystem partnership, particularly given the amount of money you've invested in 5G rollout and C-band spectrum.
Yeah.
So what's your thinking on how we continue to develop that ecosystem? Because it's still not quite, to me anyway, it still doesn't look as if it's all there right now.
And I think, so we are putting a lot of effort there. But if you think about it, it's a complex environment. If you think about ecosystem, there's several different layers. So actually, Debica's new role is technology solutions. And part of the new role is focused on the technology partnerships and ensuring that we are even closer with them. There's several different layers. You look at the needs of 5G. You need to also ensure that all the device ecosystem, equipment ecosystem is coming along. So there are so many layers of partnership. And then you work with the SIs as we do a lot nowadays, looking at really the solutions for 5G. Oh. I'm really excited about the potential. I think it will take time, but we are very focused on it and we put a lot of effort in it.
Yeah.
By the way, one of the things that we're seeing and we're really trying to make a difference in is that the very infamously known hard sales process in the enterprise domain and how Gen AI is something that can really help you co-pilot the sale.
Yes.
Because I remember my teams would be working with Excel files and everything, and it's so complex. And if you have a big American enterprise spread across the entire country, try give up sales proposal to that CTO of Walmart, right? It's like, wow, it's impossible. And now I think that's something that I'm really looking forward to. And I think that will accelerate complex solutions, which have been taking a while to even roll out, even once the customer agrees. So I think that's something that might really help. And I'm really looking forward to that.
Spot on. So we launched last year, we started with our business markets, our smaller customer, mid-market customer, salespeople. We started Verizon Velocity Selling. It's one of the biggest investment in sales training methodologies and tools and analytics that we've ever done. And now we are rolling it out to our global enterprise and then public sector salespeople as well. And exactly to your point, and especially now with the global enterprise, we start by selling the value, how you sell the value, but how you also help the salespeople to understand what are the potential solutions for the customer needs. And their Gen AI, those are the pilots I mentioned that we are really looking into helping both sales training, but also with the engagement with customers, even real time, again, with customer often.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. What do you think about the potential? We can try it later, but we have these talking avatars, which really, for me, you know, bots were helpful, but they were very, you felt like you were answering a multiple choice quiz on behalf of the enterprise that you were trying to, you know, get answers for. And now it's making it more human.
Human.
How do you feel about that developing in the future? So when you call Verizon, you might be talking to somebody and you might not ever be talking to someone real. How do you feel that's coming?
I think it depends. And the reason I'm saying that is like, when it comes to the smaller customers, increasingly they want to be served digitally and increasingly there's a lot of scale. So we need to find different ways to serve them and sell to them as well. But then looking at the larger enterprises, they still want to have the relationship.
Yeah, of course.
So they still, so I think.
So the account manager stays.
The account management.
I don't know about
still,
everyone else, but the account.
Yeah, it's still so important. But obviously we are exploring different ways to serve our customers. And we are very focused this year. I have our e-commerce platform as well for our business customers. So we are very focused in ensuring that we have the right kind of experience and it's easy to do business with us digitally.
Now, this wasn't a question I'd planned, but I've asked it several times already today and had the most fascinating responses. So I'm going to ask you this.
I might be a letdown now. Oh, no.
No pressure.
Yeah. Well, we talk about generative AI. This show's going to be all about generative AI. We talk about how it's going to help Verizon, how it helps Amdocs. But how are you using it personally? And how has it helped you with everything that you need to do in your job and your personal life and everything else?
So I am going to be a letdown here. So so I am such a geek and I use technology a lot, but I'm also at the moment very busy at Verizon and I am not able to within the Verizon device ecosystem to use any external
IT security issues.
Security, yes. Wow. So we take security very...
Yeah, we had that in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because I mean, some of the answers I've had this morning... One gentleman recreated his favorite band, Rush. The other one was making all his birthday and Christmas cards. Somebody else was writing poetry.
Some months ago, I had this discussion where this lady was saying like, well, I actually was helping my teenage son because he was late with his schoolwork. He needed to write this paper. So they used Gen AI to write that school paper. And I was like, oh. Well, the world is definitely changing.
So let's go back. We're almost out of time. And I just have one more question before we get into our fun TGI to go round. So Verizon's 5G network, from when we first spoke to Sampath, is now, you know, like you said, the most resilient network in the United States. But do you think it's been the success that it was heralded to be? And what do you think will come next from where it is right now?
I think you're not the only one asking this question. I think part of it is like overall telecom industry is very good at hyping all the different Gs.
Yeah.
And but what I would say is that 5G actually is worth the hype, but it takes time. I mentioned earlier, you know, how we are working with the ecosystem equipment and device and chipset manufacturers, you need to have the network, you need to have the devices and equipment, and then you need to have the solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you need to work with the ecosystem, you need to get everything together. But I think it can truly transform. But what we are already seeing today is just our 5G related products like fixed wireless access has been very successful for us in the US. We have 1.2 million business customers alone are using these fixed wireless access networks. Obviously, we are starting to see a lot of traction in private 5G, private wireless networks as well. We just announced, and coming from Finland, I'm very excited about this. We just announced National Hockey League, a partnership with them, and we are going to roll out private networks at their stadium.
So the similar like what you had in the Super Bowl.
What we have with NFL.
It's going to become like table stakes. There's no way you're going to be in a stadium and it's not going
to
work.
No.
Okay, so we're going to go into our TGI to go fun fast round, and all it is we just get to know a little bit more about you. I'm going to give you a multiple choice question.
Okay.
And then you're going to give me your response.
TGI to go.
So let's start. You live in New York now. The Jets or the Giants?
Giants.
Have you been to the Met?
Yes, and I have to say Giants because my team told me I'm a Giants fan.
By the way, you're a Giants fan.
Gil?
For me, football, I would say Giants.
Yeah,
for sure.
Excellent. Now, when we get to the summer, it's nice to take a vacation. You have two options, Ibiza or Bali.
What was the second option?
Bali.
Oh, come on. Okay, first of all, I'm not cool enough for Ibiza, so it will definitely be Bali.
I said Bali before, you know, it's Bali.
It's Bali. Okay. This is a bit of a nerdy question, but I put it in there. ChatGPT-4 or Gemini Advanced? And the reason I've asked this is there's been a lot of, in the last week, the talk about Google replacing Bard with Gemini. Have you had a chance to play with either of them and have a and note the differences or have a preference?
No, I don't. I can't say I have a very good answer to this. Yeah.
Well, for me, I think it's a ChatGPT. I found Google not as smooth as I do with ChatGPT, but it's so nuanced that I can't really. I mean, it's like two intelligent people I'm talking to, and I'm getting good answers.
Yeah. Depending on the day.
Yeah, the day, the question. But I think at the end of the day, you're going to make a choice, but it's so nuanced because they know everything. So, you know, it's like...
Singing or dancing?
Oh, easy one for me.
Me too. I couldn't even get to the choir when I was at primary school. So I would say dancing. I can't say I'm good, but at least, you know... better.
Whenever my friends try to convince me to participate in a karaoke session, I say, I'm bad at many things. The single thing that I'm absolutely bad at, the best bad thing for me is singing. So I'll
top that.
So we're out of time, and I know that you have a busy schedule, Iris, but I want to say thank you for joining. Great Indoors. Thank you, Gil,
participating. Very insightful.
I think it's been, the time has gone like this. It's been a wonderful conversation. And we really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us.
And enjoy the show.
Thanks, you too.
Yeah, we will.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's a wrap.
Okay, welcome back to the Great Indoors 2024 Barcelona Special Edition. We're here at MWC. It's day 3. It's been incredible, and I'm really excited to introduce my next guest, who's never been on the podcast before, but I feel like I've spoken to you thousands of times in non-podcast environments. So my guest is Chris Antlis from TBR. Chris, welcome to The Great Indoors.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah. Glad to be here.
Cool. And how's it going?
Great. It's been a great show. I think crowd-wise, it feels like back to normal pre-COVID days.
Yes.
And one of the ways I know that is the time it takes me to get from point A to point B. If it takes me a little bit longer than usual, I know I have to dodge more people. So that's one of the things that I use to assess that.
And we had Laura Duar earlier from the GSMA, the CMO, who you know, this is busier and bigger and better than ever, basically. So you're right, it is back.
Yep.
back and big and better. And let's kick things off just for our listeners who don't know you as well as me. Just give us a little bit of your background and your role at TBR, Chris.
Sure. So TBR stands for Technology Business Research, and we cover the global ICT ecosystem. And I represent the telecom aspect of the ICT ecosystem. And yeah. My team covers the global telecom industry, all the major trends and things in it, 5G, 6G, edge computing, all that good stuff.
Yeah. And how did you get to be at TBR? What was your journey there?
Oh, something by fate, actually. I was looking for an internship in the junior year of college.
Yeah.
And this happened to be the first thing I found. It happened to be 10 minutes away from where I lived at the time.
Right.
And it happened to be very similar to what I actually wanted to do, which I wanted to go into the finance industry.
Right.
So this is what I do now is a little different, but it's still like has some carryover. So I started doing that and everything just worked out. And, you know, I worked my way up and now I run the whole telecom group. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. So what have you seen at the show this week? What stood out for you?
AI. Everything's AI. So aside from AI, aside from that, cloud stuff I'm hearing a lot about. It's more what I'm not hearing about that's more interesting.
Right.
What I haven't heard, I don't think I've heard the word uttered once unless it was part of a joke. But we're 6G. And the reason it was part of the joke is because people are talking about 6G. We're still on 5G. Like, let's get 5G. Now we have 5G Advanced, which should be the top of mind topic. Instead of thinking beyond 5GA, we need to start doing and thinking about 5GA.
Yeah.
So that was the context of it. And so I didn't hear much about that. Edge computing, I heard a little bit about. Metaverse, I've heard almost nothing about that.
No. I've seen one thing related to VR. But it didn't even explicitly state metaverse.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And private networks. I did hear a lot about that here as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. So what do you think about generative AI then? Is it, and let me add a little bit more color to that question. Everybody's super excited, overexcited maybe. There's a lot of hype. There's a lot of talk. It's everywhere. I've never seen anything like this in 25 years in the industry. What do you think?
It feels real. There's something tangible here. And by tangible, I mean there's many use cases. There's a strong business case to be made. The outcomes that could be derived from it, not just Gen AI, but also AI more broadly, is profound.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've heard some, you know, use cases and all these different areas of the network and the OSS/BSS stack and all of the business aspect, the back office aspect of the telco, the front office aspect of the telco, everything up, down, and sideways can have some element of AI incorporated into it, and it can drive real change. And this it is going to profoundly change things. Now the big question is, how long is it going to take? Now things have been moving quickly with the LLM development. All the innovation that's going on, and that's all great. But in terms of the incorporation and some of the structures that need to be dealt with, like data governance, privacy, you know, data sovereignty laws and things of that nature. Also, there's ethical questions that need to be considered and, you know, input at day one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of thought that needs to go into this. And I think a lot of companies are putting a lot of thought into this.
Yeah.
It's the time frame. How long is it going to take before we really start to see it have a big impact on our world?
Yeah. Well, I think it's having an impact already. I mean, in the telecoms world, the world that, you know, you analyze and write about and me at Amdocs, I think, you know, we're fusing it into our portfolio. Mm-hmm. It's going to be delivering those and can deliver now the benefits and the values for our customer base, et cetera. But I think even just from a consumer level, I mean, it's touching everybody, right? A part of my own analysis this week is to ask guests, what are you using it for? Because here's the interesting thing. 90% of the responses I'm getting back are completely different.
Yep.
Right. So what are you using it for?
Well, I think it speaks to the use cases and how many there are.
Yeah.
There's many use cases. And It's going to be a game changer. It's going to be incorporated into many things, even things that we wouldn't think it would be incorporated in. It may, in fact, be in some way.
Yeah. Are you using ChatGPT Or
I have used it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. A few times, dabbled with it.
And what have you played with Gemini Advanced?
I have not.
Yeah.
No, just ChatGPT so far.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll make the rounds with all those things for sure.
And from a service provider perspective, the customers we serve, what do you think is going to be the biggest impact or the biggest step change for them in deployment of generative AI into their customer base?
So are you asking about the where in the from a use case perspective is going to have the biggest impact for
from
telco?
A use case perspective in the short, medium, and long term? Because obviously, you know, I think some things will take longer to manifest themselves. But
sure. So I'll just focus on the short term. The biggest impact from a magnitude standpoint for Gen AI in telco is call center.
Right.
And customer journey is up there as well.
Yeah. What are you concerned about? We get all excited. We talk about great things. What are the ethical concerns for you?
Well, I mean, obviously there's going to be a social impact from AI. We don't know the magnitude of that. It could be significant. Maybe it's not.
But when you see social?
Redundancy of positions, job losses.
Yeah.
That's definitely a concern. There's also bias, data bias, hallucinations. That's a term that's been used quite a bit.
Yeah.
Including on the floor here, I've heard that term used quite a bit as a risk.
Yeah.
Something that is a concerning aspect, something that people feel like it's a mystery. They don't really understand that. So those are some of the things that, that I've heard about.
Is there anything else that concerns you with it? Or are you more bullish on it?
Not something that concerns me, but something that I thought about. Yeah. And GPUs, we know GPUs are extremely power hungry.
Yeah.
And we know that there are, you know, the scale of GPUs that are going out into data centers is growing exponentially. As fast as they can produce them, right?
Yeah.
And there's more capacity coming online to make more. Is there enough energy to run all those GPUs? And is that energy in the right spots? And does that energy meet ESG goals?
But is there an argument that there are, if you saying there wasn't an energy crisis, but it's clearly a problem for sustainability. But there could be an argument that the use case or use cases could be developed to offset that footprint with use cases that are less energy dependent, if you see what I mean.
I do. And that is definitely a potential that could be the case.
Yeah.
It may be the case. But I just something I thought about because, you know, some countries have energy problems today. We see it. I mean, you know, you have, is the power in the right spot? And what type of power is it? Is it fossil fuel, you know, creating a lot of carbon, or is it a green energy source like a hydro or something like that?
Yeah.
So this is something I think we're going to hear more about if it becomes a big problem. We do know today that the mega data centers, they have to be like power is like one of the number one, like one of the top things that they have to consider for any new data center. And they need to make sure that wherever they put that data center, because that data center ain't going to move.
Yeah.
But they are going to add more capacity to it over time. And they need to make sure that they have a sustainable energy source, a consistent energy source, and a scalable energy source wherever those data centers go. Yeah. With GPUs, it's even more of a something to consider.
So let's switch gears a little bit. I mean, because we could talk about generative AI forever. I mean, literally the conversations have gone for me for hours and hours and hours. And even when we're not recording a podcast, we're generally talking about it if you're here at this show, right? But what else is significant right now in the world of US telecoms from your perspective? For a long time now, you know, you've come to Amdocs and we've talked about things like fixed wireless access and, you know, the adoption of 5G and 5G use cases and things like that. What other things aside from generative AI is significant in the US right now in the mobile operator space?
So in the mobile operator space, it's fixed wireless access is the hottest thing. And for good reason. I mean, it is the only scalable ROI positive use case for 5G that I've seen.
Yeah.
And telcos are making a lot of money from it. The ones that have been leaning into that opportunity like we're talking like billions of dollars in top line revenue that they've generated now from that.
Yeah.
And it's scalable. It leverages their existing macro networks. They understand the radio characteristics of people that are using, you know, mobile broadband. So it's a seamless transition into this. I think we're going to see a lot more FWA globally. We already are. We've seen Reliance Jio talk about 100 million POPs that they want to build theirs out for. I think that could go way higher over time, especially as India continues to economically develop as a nation. The opportunities are massive for this, especially in markets where they didn't have broadband before.
Yes.
Because you're introducing new subscribers, net new people who weren't connected before. Now they have an opportunity to get a high-speed data connection for their entire household or a business where they might not have had that before. I mean, that's revolutionary for places like, you know, Africa, rural parts of most countries. And, you know, it could be a big, a much bigger deal than I think people are even talking about it now.
It's really interesting because I spoke with Globe earlier this week from the Philippines. They have 57 million subscribers on their network in the Philippines. They, you know, there's over 100% penetration rate in the Philippines. Yep. I mean, it's vastly a prepaid market. But their internet, broadband, and fiber is completely the opposite in the Philippines. So their growth vector for them is internet connectivity in the home and broadband.
Yep.
But they're pursuing fiber, right? Is that because, you know, do you think if 5G was up and running and fully functional in the Philippines, they would be going for FWA completely?
Not completely, but they would be using a lot of it.
Yeah.
So when I think of 5G, and remember, 5G is a platform.
Yeah.
And that platform is going to improve over time. You have 5G Advanced, you have new releases from 3GPP. There's new technologies that can dramatically increase the bandwidth, the range of these technologies, incorporation of millimeter wave. Because of those things, I view FWA as wireless fiber.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a game changer. And you can deploy it so much faster than fiber. It is so hard to deploy fixed access.
Yeah.
It's so hard. Yeah. It takes so long. It's very expensive. FWA, you already have a tower there, or you have, you know, you could put it on other structures. It's very flexible, and you can really build that out, and you can even mesh it.
Yeah,
there's meshing technologies now where you can do integrated access backhaul, where you can hop a signal forward and backwards in the network. Like, that opens up a whole nother set of opportunities for the telcos to optimize their networks and to get better outcomes.
Yeah, yeah. And for the cable players who've gone all in on 10G, which is nothing to, as you know it. And they're not allowed to even market it as 10G moving forward because it's misleading. Are they in trouble because of FWA?
There's going to be a contingent of their subscriber bases that are going to stick with the companies. Yeah. But there's also a contingent that's going to migrate off for various reasons. FWA is a very strong value proposition. It is cheaper than cable offerings. This is a true statement. So, and that's where we're seeing some of the subs going to. But then remember, there's also the unconnected and the underserved. There's people with DSL lines, which the cable guys don't offer.
Yeah, yeah.
But those DSL subs might want to move to FWA because you're getting many times more bandwidth over the wireless network.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a dynamic situation, but are they losing share? Yes, they're losing share in HSI. That's something that they need to really think about. But they, you know, there are some cases where cable operators are actually using FWA with things like CBRS spectrum, where they can do overbuild or they can do adjacent neighborhoods. So, for example, if they have HFC going down a neighborhood and there's a neighborhood adjacent to that neighborhood where they don't have HFC, they can splice into that HFC in that neighborhood, put up a FWA access point, and they can reach into the adjacent neighborhood. That's a big opportunity for these guys because that's in some cases that could even be greenfield opportunity, you know?
Exactly.
These are things to think about. So on a net basis, the cable guys, this is a big issue for them, but it's also something that they can mitigate and actually embrace the technology themselves.
Yeah. Now, something that's a really good point, Chris, something that else has come up today in my conversations has had a lot of coverage in the last 12 months is satellites.
Yep.
Right. There's been marketing announcements There's been interesting personalities that own various satellite entities. There's been geopolitical wranglings over various satellites and using them in various areas. What's your thoughts on the evolution, or not the evolution, that just satellites in general, and the fact that they're coming into smartphones? People like T-Mobile are doing deals with some of the satcom operators. What's your thoughts on that?
So this is another aspect of the market that I think is underestimated.
Right. Are you doing right? Interesting.
And think about those satellite networks. It could be LEO, MEO, or GEO, or a combination of the three of them, right? It doesn't have to just be LEO. But you think of those as a platform. There is new technologies on roadmaps that's coming. Some of them are already in commercial environments today that are way more advanced than anything satellite has had before.
Yeah.
The pace of breakthroughs in satellite connectivity technology over the last, I'd say 10 years, has come leaps and bounds, and most people don't know.
Yeah.
And there's some, and you know, some people in the industry that underestimate, oh, satellite, you know, low bandwidth, you can't scale it, you can't get a lot of subs on those platforms. It's not true anymore.
It's not
true anymore. And there's some really interesting use cases for satellite. There's interesting architectural considerations for satellite. For example, NTN, which is one of the specifications in 3GPP for 5G, where you can tie together the space-based connectivity infrastructure with terrestrial, and you can build a more optimized network. It gives you so much more flexibility.
Yeah.
And opportunities that weren't there before. It's a very exciting time to be in satellites. And I think over the next couple of years, as the direct to device starts to be used, like people really start to use it and see that this actually works. Like I know people that use Starlink, for example.
Yeah.
And that's kind of obscure. So like, well, how do you use it? Like, do you get like a big satellite dish?
Yeah.
Do you have to like go like hang out on a ladder and like put it up on your roof? Like none of that.
Yeah.
None of it.
Yeah.
It's so seamless. It works really good.
Yeah.
And I think once people start to see that, that's going to start to change the prevailing wisdom around it.
And I haven't seen it. And somebody told me there was a lot of new hardware and consumer hardware and CPEs for satellite here.
Yeah,
I didn't see any of it. There was one that they said with a car, you know, that was beaming satellite into the car, and the whilst the speeds will never be FWA pace, it'll be as fast as 3G.
Oh, it'll be faster than 3G. At least 4G speeds.
Oh, really?
Oh, like Starlink, I think you get over 100 megs today.
Oh, really?
I think so. Yeah, because they remember it's a platform. When they started out, it wasn't.
Yeah.
But they've been iterating on that.
Yeah.
Over time, they've been able to find ways to improve the algorithms to do the phased array technology.
Yeah.
They've figured out ways to optimize that and to increase the bandwidth of the system.
Yeah.
So,
wow. That's really interesting. Now, we've finished the podcast with our TGI to go quick fire round. And it's just a bit of fun to finish after many, many conversations and meetings and everything else that's gone on today for you and for me, Chris. And we always have a lot of fun doing this. So if you're sitting comfortably, we'll do TGI to go.
Okay.
TGI to go.
Would you rather go hiking or biking?
Ooh, that's a hard one. I'm gonna say hiking.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say hiking. Yeah.
Yeah. And you do that often?
Not enough.
Yeah. And you live in New Hampshire.
I do. I should be doing it more.
I think Larissa put this one in here. New York Jets or the Patriots?
Patriots.
Yeah.
No question. I mean, I live in New Hampshire. If I said anything else, that would be you just can't do that. But it's Patriots. It would be Patriots regardless. So yes, yeah. Patriots.
I said this before, ChatGPT or Gemini Advanced?
So I've only used ChatGPT, so I'm going to say ChatGPT.
ChatGPT. Yeah. But using it often, personally?
No. No, but not. Will I in the future? Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And would you rather be in Miami or LA?
Oh, man, that's hard. I have not been to LA yet.
Right.
I've been to Miami multiple times. But I'll just have to go with Miami.
Okay, perfect, perfect. So, Chris, we finished for today. I've really enjoyed speaking to you in person. Normally, we're on the Teams or something when we're doing your briefings. So, any last thoughts that you'd like to impart on our listeners before we sign off today?
Nothing's coming to mind. We covered quite a bit today.
We did in pretty good pace, I think.
Yeah.
Pretty good pace. Been really interesting. Really, really appreciate. Always value your insights, Chris. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So thank you, Iris. Thank you, Gil. Thank you, Chris. And you know what? I'll say it again. Those conversations were a real highlight of MWC for me this year. Really fantastic, fantastic stuff. So please subscribe to our podcast and all the usual podcast channels. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts and enjoyed the show, please rate and review. And also visit our website, amdocs.com/thegreatindoors. There's a new sizzle reel there. Check it out. And we'll be back next week for more great conversations from Barcelona. I'm Matthew Roberts, still here in Barcelona for Amdocs, and have a great day wherever you are.